The touch of your lips.
Hey, everyone, welcome to the City of Goleta Planning Commission meeting of Monday, June 13th, 2011. We have one hearing this evening, and I really can't give an approximation of how long that might last. All the agenda and all the pertinent materials are available on the City of Goleta website as well. If you have any cell phones, please turn them off. We'd appreciate that. So I'd like to call this meeting to order, and we will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance. Will you please rise?
Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Madam Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Commissioner Solomon?
Present.
Commissioner Stapleman?
Present.
Commissioner West is absent. Vice Chair Wallace?
Here.
Chair Sheeler?
Present. Mr. Chase or Ms. Miller, are there any adjustments to this evening's agenda?
Chair Sheeler, there are none. No changes.
All right, thank you. Okay, so we'll move right ahead then.
Public forum.
That's right, the public forum. Is there anybody here who would like to speak on any issues that are pertinent to the purview of the City of Goleta Planning Commission that aren't on tonight's agendized hearing? Madam Clerk, are there any speaker slips for this?
No, Chair Sheeler.
Okay, thank you. And so we will then go ahead and close the public forum portion of the meeting. And now we'll move ahead to our next agenda item. Will the clerk please read the next item into the record?
Item A1 is the administrative agenda. Planning Commission minutes for the Planning Commission meeting of May 23rd, 2011.
We have a recommendation to approve these minutes for the meeting of May 23rd, 2011. Is there any discussion of those minutes?
No discussion, Chair, from me. No.
Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
I will move to approve.
Thank you. And do we have a second?
A second.
We have a second. I mean, any further discussion for the approval of the minutes? Okay, let's vote on this. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 4-0.
Abstain. Abstain.
One abstain. Thank you. So it's 3-0-1. Okay, item B is the public hearing on our agenda. Will the clerk please read the agenda, item B, into the record?
Yes. Item B is a public hearing. The public hearing has been continued from April 11th, 2010. It's item 01-SB-DP-CUP, South Fairview Commercial Center, located at 151 South Fairview Avenue, APN 073-080-019.
Thank you. Let's start with declarations, any site visits or ex parte communications?
Chair, I spoke with the applicant.
No site visits beyond the initial one and no ex parte.
Okay.
The same as Commissioner Solomon.
Thank you, and I haven't visited the site since the original site visit, and I did have an opportunity to review the tape of the Design Review Board meeting. Okay, that will then take us to the staff presentation, which would be Ms. Wells and Mr. Hansen. Ms. Miller and Mr. Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. This item was continued to allow staff and the applicant additional time to address some questions and concerns that were raised by the commission at its April 11th hearing regarding this matter. And staff has included a list of those various issues and questions in your staff report. This is basically our understanding of the points that you wanted additional information, additional analysis on, and that's what we're going to be bringing back to you tonight. Also, subsequent to that April 11th hearing, the applicant voluntarily returned the project to the Design Review Board for further conceptual level of review. Remember, conceptual level is a more informal give and take, if you will, between the applicant and the city's design professionals. There is no action actually resulting from that review, but it is a good opportunity for this give and take process to occur and additional input to be provided to the applicant from the DRB. I have with me tonight the DRB's draft minutes. Those minutes have not yet been approved, but I thought it might be helpful if I just went through what those comments were that were made by the DRB at the conclusion of that April 24th review, and they are as follows. The DRB has conducted conceptual advisory review with positive comments. The applicant has demonstrated a competent conformance with the interpretation of the Goleta Old Town Heritage District guidelines. The DRB finds good cause for the heights noted on the plans. The project integrates well within the site with relation to size, bulk, and scale of the surrounding area. The height of the tower is acceptable to the DRB because of its successful context within the building design, and it seems appropriate in size, bulk, and scale with the rest of the architecture on the site. Also, the DRB designated Member Brown to come to the hearing tonight, and Ms. Brown has graciously agreed to do that. She is here if you have any additional questions or want a more detailed discussion of that, the results of that hearing and those comments that came out of it. In addition, the Planning Commission, in effect, tasked staff with going back and looking at the good cause findings that were prepared with the initial staff report. As you all recall, the structure, which sits in Old Town, has a height to the top of the parapet wall, which would screen all the roof-mounted mechanical equipment needed to serve the building, of 31 feet, and then there are cross members, or as the architect has indicated, fins that would run perpendicular to the part of the parapet wall that parallels Fairview, providing additional screening that's 2 feet higher. So that takes the building to 33 feet. And then the tower element, which really sits kind of in the center of the building and it houses both the elevator and the stairway between the first and second floor, goes up to 40 feet. Well, in under the city's general plan in Old Town, the recommended maximum height measured from finished grade to the top of the structure, it's not an averaged height like in our zone district requirements, but that maximum height is recommended not to exceed 30 feet, and there are provisions in the general plan that would allow for an exceedance of that recommended standard if good cause findings, the criteria which are established in the general plan, can be made for the project. So to address, you know, some of the points that were made by the Planning Commission back in April, staff went back and conferred further with the architect on what the building is really being designed to do, looked at cross sections of the building, and also got a kind of a comparative rendering of what would happen, say, if you lowered that tower down to the height of the highest part of the roof, as you will. And basically, staff believes that those criteria are met to allow for this exceedance. First of all, there's probably the applicant's architect can get into this in much more detail, but it doesn't seem if you provide enough height to allow for the flexibility that would accommodate various users, which are as of yet not specifically identified, you're going to need a certain amount of vertical space between floors and up on the roof, because this is a shell building and it doesn't lend itself to coming in with a very specific design. So the building height pretty much is that minimum necessary to provide for that reasonable use down the road for users that are not yet specifically identified. And then also when you look at the tower, there's going to be certain height requirements to handle not just the elevator, but the mechanical equipment that operates the elevator. So when we took all this into consideration, reviewed the comments and so forth from the design review board, staff then took that information and prepared the seven different points on which the actual findings for good cause are incorporated, both in a detailed discussion in your staff report and then summarized in the actual findings staff has prepared for approval of the project. There were also concerns raised by the Planning Commission at the April hearing regarding the traffic impact analysis, basically in response to questions raised about the age of the data used in that traffic study, as well as some Caltrans comments upon the analysis of the right turn on red movement at the southbound 101 Fairview interchange. And the applicant's traffic engineer has prepared a supplemental traffic analysis where they went back and they looked at the data that they used in that original traffic impact analysis and then compared it to the city's most recent traffic counts in that area, which were taken in 2010. And the traffic engineer, Derek Rapp, is with us tonight, and I'm sure he can go into any specifics, specific questions that you may have. But in staff's review of that supplemental analysis, basically what we found is that the data from 2005 that was used to prepare the original traffic impact analysis basically shows significantly higher traffic volumes, both during the peak hours as well as the overall ADT counts, than what we're seeing now. And this is a situation that we kind of see across the city, and we speculate that it is a result of the recession. Fewer people with jobs, people don't have as much discretionary income, people just aren't traveling as much, and we have seen really a fall off in traffic since September of 2008. So that is consistent with kind of our overall observations within the city. But anyway, the point being is the data that was used, albeit now 6 years old, provides for a worst case scenario. In other words, if you implement the project now, you probably aren't going to see quite the severity in traffic in the baseline plus project traffic conditions as you may have, say, pre-2008. And again, that's really what we're looking for when we do these kind of analyses. What is the worst case scenario? What's the worst thing that we would reasonably expect to occur as a result of project implementation? And so from that perspective, staff believes that the findings set forth in that traffic impact analysis and used in the mitigated ND that is also accompanying your staff report tonight are valid for the purposes of project review. Also, as noted at the April 11th hearing, there were I think there was a duplicate condition in the conditions of approval regarding the fire hydrant, the fire department's requirements for a new fire hydrant, as well as some outdated language with regards to greenhouse gas mitigation measures. Those two points have been corrected in both the proposed final MND that you have in your staff report tonight, as well as in the project conditions of approval. And with that, based upon this further analysis, staff does continue to recommend that the Planning Commission approve this project with the findings that are in Attachment 1 to your staff report and subject to the conditions that are outlined in Attachment 2 of your staff report. And I just wanted to point out, if you're looking for the supplemental traffic analysis, it is attached to the proposed final MND as Attachment B. So that's where that document rests within that whole packet that has been given to you. So with that, I'd like to close the staff presentation and available for questions.
Mr. Chair and Commissioners, I have also two cleanup items. And I wanted to note that your CEQA resolution, which is on big page 13, in finalizing that or execute or causing it to be signed, we would fix the format for the recitals. There's a couple whereases that are not quite consistent. And then on page 84 of your final MND, That's the portion of the document that deals with fire protection services. And we just wanted to further clarify the references that we used in conducting or preparing that information. And it's the general plan, coastal land use plan, final EIR, and in particular, table 3.12-1, which shows population statistics per fire station and the fire department themselves. Thank you.
Thank you for that report, for that clarification. At this moment, we'll ask the planning commissioners if they have any questions from the staff report. Mr. Walls.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Alan, in the staff report, pages 3 and 4, you've kind of broken down the commission's questions from last time into 15. And some of them certainly have been addressed in the staff report and by the presentation here tonight. But I was wondering if you have plans for some of the others, such as number 6, the sustainability features, the green features of number 7, the Chumash landscape, the softening in 9. And number 15, this project relies on trees planted on another piece of property. Mm-hmm. What would happen? Are you going to talk about those things?
Mr. Chair and Commissioner Wallace, the applicant basically addresses those points in their presentation that they did to the DRB on May 24th, and it is my understanding that they are going to bring that presentation back for your review tonight.
Do any of the other commissioners have any questions that they'd like to ask of staff at this time? Commissioner Solomon?
Not at this moment, thank you.
Mr. Stapleman? Okay, let's go ahead and open the public hearing then. And we'd like to give the applicant this opportunity to make their presentation. Do you know approximately how much time you might like?
15.
Sounds great, thanks. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the commission, I'm Bendy White, the agent for John and Jana Price. And we're glad to be back again, and we will be addressing the questions that Ms. Wallace alluded to. The last meeting, the concerns focused on the design, in particular the tower, the landscaping, the project's green and sustainable elements, and the project's impacts. The design team relooked at the tower and in the interim, as you heard, went back to DRB to receive their comments, which, of course, we're very grateful to have received such strong support. And Bruce Bartlett will review that process with you. And on the traffic, Derek Rapp has reviewed the traffic analysis to confirm the validity of earlier studies. And as Mr. Hansen said, we find that today's traffic levels are, in fact, lower. But Mr. Rapp will walk through those questions one by one and give you a summation. So I'd appreciate then a chance to wrap it up after Mr. Rapp and Mr. Bartlett speak. And Mr. Mavis is here to speak about the revisions to landscaping as well. So Mr. Bartlett will go from here.
Good evening, Planning Commission. It's good to be back again. I know when we left last time with a continuance, thinking 2 months out, that boy, it seemed like forever. It went by in a flash. We kept ourselves busy, actually, updating all the information that led us to the original project and reaffirming all of the assumptions and the tests and reports that this project was based upon. And it really gave us a good opportunity to, you know, reaffirm the assumptions that we had used in developing this project and making sure that the agencies and the review committees that we'd been before, that they were still on the same page and that everything was still fresh and current. So we've worked with several groups during that interim, we've spent quite a bit of time with the Goleta Water District, and we've redone a lot of our water calcs and have substantially reduced some of the water consumption within the building. We voluntarily went back to the design review board with the exact design that you saw, just to make sure that they were still in agreement with where we had left off 4 years ago in our most recent review with them. They were surprised to see us back, but welcomed the opportunity. There's, you know, obviously a slight change in the makeup of the committee, but overall they were very supportive in how we had arrived at the prior design and confirmed their support again with where we are at currently with the project, with some recommendations to obviously come back to them after we received Planning Commission approval to work on certain items that they had noted during that review. They had a list of items that they would like to see us address, which are more architectural in detail, but things that we will do when we go back to the design review board. But we at least felt we were on good ground with them, and that the I think the questions that were raised here 2 months ago by Planning Commission, I think we've at least addressed the thinking, and the prior minutes are all current in terms of their content. We've also had a chance to work with staff to address many of the questions that were raised here at the Planning Commission, and we'll try and incorporate some of those, the ones that Alan did not already mention, into our presentation. So with that being said, Kevin, if you want to roll through some of the slides. Okay, I'm going to try and keep the presentation brief. I think most of you recall the intro that we did at our last presentation. You know where the site is, bounded by Hollister and the city of Santa Barbara on the south and the west. The next slide. If you want to go back to the site plan, Kevin. This was the composite site plan where we gave you the orientation of the building, the materiality of the hardscape, the landscape areas, and then we've ghosted in lightly the adjacent trees to the west and to the south of the project that are on other property. We've also indicated the improvements to the streetscape, which include the elongation of left turn lanes, widening of the center throat of the intersection where the cross traffic occurs. So those are all represented on this plan. If you go to the floor plans, in our work with the water district, we have changed the multiple toilet room configurations that we had in the earlier plans. We've gone to common facilities both on the first floor and second floor. We've been able to reduce the fixture count to a more reasonable level and reduced quite a bit the interior water use that was proposed and the allocation that we had reviewed with them previously. And that occurs also on the second floor plan. We've delineated in the darker texture the deck and public areas to the building, and the real advantage, if you'll recall, especially to the second floor plan, is that it can really take advantage of the wonderful views to the golf course on the west, which would be at the top of the screen with those offices. And that really, I think, helps lend itself to some of the passive sustainability elements that we're trying to integrate into the building, of having, you know, the passive through ventilation, light from both sides, not having the heavy dependence on artificial lighting and those type things. So we've really tried to embody, you know, a lot of the sustainability aspects really into the bones of the shell of the building, even though we're not proposing all of the interior items just yet. And then on the roof plan, we have also allocated areas which are between the big rib fins, where we're showing locations for future photovoltaic panels that would potentially come in when we do the tenant improvements at a later date, when we know who the occupants will be on the building. We've also allocated the center area, most hidden by the mechanical screens and baffles from view, and that would be for the rooftop mechanical equipment. So we've tried to really create a shell that allows for the future, and I'm sure that technology will continue to change, but we want to protect our ability to adapt with it, and we think that this plan does that. Next. So the building, as you see it now, is the same elevation that we presented 2 months ago. It does represent the tower as we had it designed. These are the drawings we reviewed with the Design Review Board. They were happy to see that we had integrated the tower and that we allowed for natural light into the tower, which is the main circulation element for the public on this building. It's not just to house the elevator. This is all the vertical circulation via stairs and elevator to the offices, which are strictly on the second floor, and to the residential, which is on the second floor as well. So this tower really serves a multitude of purposes. It, you know, it houses the elevator, it provides for pedestrian access as well, and it also is a throughway from the rear parking lot to the front plaza, so that people that park to the rear of the project can enter the fronts of the commercial stores by going through this tower space. So it really announces itself as the entry of the project, whether you're going from the rear to the front plaza, from the front parking to the upper suites to the residences. Everybody really goes to that tower element, and that's why it really is a wayfinding piece in itself, and that's why we feel that the architecture and the height of the tower really signifies that. We prepared sketches that we gave Alan. We have those in some of our backup slides if there's other questions when we get into that period that we can put up on the screen if there's questions from the commissioners on what happens if the tower goes away. We've also analyzed, you know, there were questions from the last hearing about the elevator, and I know there's confusing language in the code. We did bring research and excerpts out of the code that we can go through the specifics if we need to get into, you know, language debates on and or what if and all the, you know, all those important items. But the real thrust of it is, irregardless of how we read the code on the elevator, we do want to provide the elevator to not preclude, you know, the disabled from use of the upper floor of the building. We feel that that wouldn't be a prudent decision for us, and I know our client does not want to go there with his building to limit the potential uses. And the only offices we have are on the second floor. So to say that an insurance company couldn't have a disabled customer, I think would be pretty discriminatory, and I wouldn't want to be party to that, and neither does our client. So, and also we want the natural light in the tower. So technically we could do an elevator probably within 30 or 31 feet and fit the mechanics in, but it doesn't really give us the aesthetics we're looking for in terms of pedestrian circulation, point of entry to the building, and nice, sustainable, natural light levels for that space. So, but we do have all the code technicalities. If people want to get into that, we'd be happy to share that. Next. This is the view that I think has caused some of the controversy over the height of the parapets, and that is the fact that the building from the north is viewed from the elevated position coming down the overpass, and that you're actually going to be viewing the building from above. So while the mechanical screen is 1 foot above the 30-foot line, it serves a valuable purpose in trying to help screen the equipment as you view the building from above, and we think that lowering it to 30 is just going to open up further exposure to the things that we really don't want to see. And so hopefully you'll understand that aspect. And as we get into the building sections, we kind of highlighted with sight lines to really help point that out. This is that section. So from the public sidewalk vantage point, the apparent height of the building really is only about 27 feet. The line of the roof overhang edge is at 26 feet right now. These baffles, which block the view from the overpass coming this way to the mechanical equipment, are higher, but they are barely visible higher than the 27 or 26-foot eave line of the building. And those cross bulkheads that we put in on the roof really are strictly to mask that view from the overpass, and that they're not very visible because of the way they've been stepped back, which I think shows in the next section, Kevin. They're really stepped back from the perimeter of the building, so you don't see a lot of that bulkhead wall. One of the comments from the Design Review Board, and we thought was a good one, they asked us to study when we returned to the Design Review Board of maybe looking at a different profile on that bulkhead. One of the members suggested adding a slight curve so we maintain the height at the center and then taper off toward the edges of the building, similar to other examples we've seen in town. So obviously we will explore that before we go back to the design review board. But and they had a few other comments as we went through, so it was good to get those and kind of be refreshed on their thinking. Next. This is the north elevation, and it also shows the kind of the grove or stand of trees that's on the golf course property to the west. And then we've also ghosted in the new landscaping that we will be adding on the north area of our project, which is heavily landscaped. That's our biggest landscape component on the site, and we can talk about that when we get to the landscape plan. This is the west or the golf course elevation, again with the existing trees silhouetted. Most of those trees, I think, are probably even higher than we have rendered here, judging by the current photos. So the building is going to be pretty invisible, even though maybe we wish the trees were a little thinner so we could have a better view of the golf course as well. But anyway, it's a nice attribute. It's probably one of the few sites in the city of Goleta that really is surrounded by nice vegetation, and we'd like to be able to really, you know, take advantage of it. And it's also good for the sustainability aspects of the project for shading, you know, in addition to the sunshades and the other elements that we've integrated into the structure. Next. This is the south elevation. This actually would be viewed beyond the tire store, but again, with the large stand of trees, it will be a seldom seen elevation from a distance. You'll actually be able to see it from our southerly parking lot, but again, this is sort of the narrowest end of our building, and I think it presents a pretty small presence. Next. So I think some of the questions that really came up at the last Planning Commission hearing was, you know, how do we really fit in with the Old Town guidelines? And you know, we were concerned that maybe something had really shifted or there were new things added since we had been to the design review board, and we really went back and looked at all of those again. And we just put in a few samples to kind of show you some of the things that we found that are still consistent and I think really embrace the bones of what we've got embedded into our structure. And this was, you know, stepping of the upper floors and the forms on the building. This building really does layer back. We've made a purposeful intent to do that. It helps diminish the apparent height and also creates nice shadow lines and a little bit more play on the architecture. And we have roof types that tend to try and minimize the overall massing of the building. We don't have huge overhangs that then further exaggerate the footprint or the structure. And then we've also tried to vary, you know, the building materials and the colors that then break it down into smaller pieces, all which are, you know, I think in conformance with those guidelines. Next slide. The front elevation really, I think, picks up the feel of what was intended for the main part of Old Town, which is mostly along Hollister Avenue, where you have, as Kevin DeMaine likes to say, the shoulder-to-shoulder buildings that are really built right at the property line. And our project tries to pick up that feel, even though we have a totally different site where our building is set back because of the required sight line distances, because of the curvature of Hollister Avenue, and, you know, some of the other attributes. We want to emulate a lot of the architectural feel that we get on Hollister, but then this is such a very different site, we think that there's some things about it that can be handled differently. We have gone in and articulated the front so that it looks like an assemblage of smaller buildings. We've included colonnades, we've recessed the windows, and we've integrated sunshades and awnings, a lot of the things that are in your guidelines, even though normally they're applied to buildings that are right at the property line. But we think it really is appropriate still on this building so that it has a similar vocabulary, even though the siting is different. Next slide. This is one of the example pages out of the guidelines where it really talks about the rhythm on the exterior elevations, breaking it down into the smaller components. And the highlighted area is the statement about really trying to hide and obscure the view of all the mechanical equipment, especially if it is placed on the roof. So we think that we've demonstrated that, and we included, again, that brief section of our building to show some of the attributes that we've integrated into the structure to do that. Next slide, Kevin. This page of the guidelines really talked about trying to break down the rhythm of the main facades into increments of not more than about 50 feet so that you have the ability to create separate shops and storefronts, let each have their own signage and identity, and we think that we've really broken this building into several pieces and that it will give the opportunity for a multitude of tenants and occupancy types. That's the advantage of the mixed-use building, is we can really play up the differences of what we have going on. So we think that this architecture really tries to celebrate that. Next. This page really talks about the primary entrances to the buildings, and it does make reference to roofline and punctuating the roofline with towers or breaks in the surface to really bring attention to the entries, and that's exactly what we've tried to do with this. And I think what's really different about this project is that the tower element, the eave line, I think, is about at 37 feet. The peak of that little roof is at 40, but it's also about 100 feet back from the front property line. So it's set deep into the building. It's really the hinge point of the wings of the building. Most of that tower is buried into the architecture and only expresses at the front and back corners as the pedestrian entryways back and forth to the plaza. And then the obviously the windows above are to let the natural light in and really make that an inviting space as opposed to a dark stairwell. And then the last page that we put into our program here on the design guidelines really is about if you want to go to that one, Kevin? Oh, I had one more in mind. You must have left it out. This was the one on the section and the stepping, but I think that just came in early. So back to the site plan. As you all recall, we went through, I think, an elaborate presentation last time as to the site constraints and why the building was the shape it was, why it sat on the site in its particular location, given the the floodway, the floodplain, the sightline distances. So I won't go back through all that, but that's really what influenced how we have this site plan diagram. And again, this also represents where we've increased the landscape area from our prior iterations. And I know there was discussion last time about, you know, what were some of the green attributes associated with the project, and I think we didn't spend very long on that. And I know the staff report had quite a list of the things that we were mandated to do, which is a pretty long list, but I think there's a lot of things that kind of went unsaid. And I think, first of all, you know, this was a brownfield site. It underwent cleanup, and I think one of the most sustainable things you can do is reuse property, you know, in the core of the city and really turn it into something nice. So it is a reuse of a previously contaminated site that we're going to be really bringing back to life in the community, and I think that's a good thing. We've also, you know, increased the ability to add landscape and bioswales and handle all the stormwater and really have a much better situation than what it's ever been in its more recent life. And we've also been able to, I think, enhance the neighborhood at the same time, keep most of the mature vegetation that surrounds the site, and maintain, you know, the views and all the other attributes that are good things about this particular property. And it'd be nice to not have the temporary use that has become so permanent there. So we look forward to that. And it truly is a gateway, and we hope that this project will help celebrate that. And next slide. Okay. At this point, I'd like to have Sam Mafis come up and talk a bit about the landscape plan and the details associated with that, and we also included some sketches. I know in our last meeting there was discussion about were there other ways to handle some of the sidewalks along the street frontages. So with that, I'll let Sam come up and go through the landscape for you.
Thank you, Bruce. And commissioners, I'll be as brief as I can about the landscape, but in essence, it is a very sustainable landscape. The majority is drought-tolerant and native, if not 100%. And the drought-tolerant aspects of it, we kind of brought up at the DRB that really allowed us to look at water savings. And in the last couple months, we've looked at the water savings and done some calculations based on our proposed landscaping and really shown that there is a real savings to the kind of plantings that we proposed. The general Chumash-related plantings that we were charged at looking at are throughout the entire property, but the majority still reside in this area, and we've looked at increasing those from the last meeting that we've had to a point where we've added California lilac in this area, ceanothus in two sides to this area, which was something that they used for cleansing, bathing. So we really wanted to relate to what the purpose was for these plantings in their normal lives, their daily lives. We also used white sage, which they use in ceremonial and religious ceremonies. Three types of grasses here that we've used, and we've spread those grasses throughout. The frontage were the rush, the juncus, and the deer grass, which they use for baskets and containers. So we've really tried to take the opportunity to make this an expressive way to bring that Chumash honoring of their, you know, their old site that is what we've strived to preserve in this subtle way. But it's mostly the native and sustainability aspects of the landscape that I wanted to talk to its attributes. Do you want me to speak, Bruce, to the sidewalk issues? Do you want to address that? In the last session with you, there was discussion about the meandering aspects of trying to break up the sidewalk that's right along Fairview. And I think we do have some constraints with the elevations and the way the property works to the street in terms of slope. As you can see from the parking area down to the sidewalk, there's a slope that presents a crossfall where meandering a sidewalk would create more masonry, more walls to create a drop or a terrace. We've tried to also, with this scheme, give a large width of 10 feet of planting, which I think the combination of low to high planting, the advantage we have there is some very good screening to the fronts of the cars from Fairview, from not only the driver but also the walking experience. The alternate to that was to look at a more parkway separating the sidewalk and trying to bring that meandering effect onto that area of the property would really increase the width reduce the width of the planting in essence, the perceived planting. You're breaking it up into two smaller pieces, a little strip of traditional parkway planting, which we don't feel would really give the pedestrian that much more of a buffer from what's being proposed. And I think it would also include some kind of property switch and swap. So our alternative early on was to try to create a real nice landscaping along Fairview, and this section kind of shows you how this design really achieves that. So all in all, I think the design review board found that the design theme, the overall planting scheme, was well done to match the architecture and the overall feel of this gateway property. There was even discussion about certain palm trees being able to be utilized that are in the community in this building where we might be able to get some that are being used or not used, I guess, at the hospital. So we started to look at strategically how we could recycle things in the community to this nice site. So if there are any questions, I'll be here to answer them later.
Thanks, Sam. After our last meeting, there was quite a list of items that I think related to the traffic and traffic study, and there was a kind of a list of questions. You know, one about reliance on old data that was, I think, from 2004. There were questions, should there be a left turn out on the project? Somebody raised comments about perceived lunch hour peak traffic condition. And then there were questions also related to some of the Caltrans dialogue regarding the right turn on red, especially up at the on-ramps and off-ramps to the freeway. And so I think relative to all that, Derek Rapp from Penfield and Smith has generated a brief report to address all that, and I think he's prepared to come up and elaborate on some of those details, at least on those items. So, Derek, if you would.
Thank you, Chair and Commission members. Yes, I think one of the key issues that came up last meeting was sort of the relevancy of the traffic study, which was back in 2005, and much of the data was from 2004. Obviously, a very fair and reasonable question. If it is any comfort to the commission, I and Penfield and Smith do work all over the South Coast, and we're having the same type of conversation all over the South Coast with, you know, older counts. For whatever reason, some projects have sat dormant for some time, either because of the economy or other reasons, coming back up now, and everyone having sort of the same question, well, how relevant is this data anymore? And one good news I can share with you is that across the board, the answer is always the same as what we came with here, that counts are consistently lower today than they were 2, 3, 5, in some cases even 8 years ago. So it's a pretty consistent answer across the board when we start comparing old data and new data. And that's what we've done here. We've gone through data that either the city of Goleta has collected through their subconsultants, or the SBCAG had collected for various reasons. And essentially what we looked at ADT counts that were collected in 2010. We also looked at a turning movement count that was collected at the southbound ramps at Fairview from 2008. And essentially both of those counts show significantly lower volumes than what was counted in 2004 or in the 2005 data. 2005 traffic study. In addition, since the original project that was analyzed, the project currently is slightly smaller in square footage than it was previously, resulting in about a little bit less than 50 trips per day than was originally projected, and one peak hour trip in the PM lower. The other issue was essentially the volumes, the daily volumes, and we compared, as you can see in Table 2 of our supplemental analysis, the 2004 versus 2010 volumes. The AM was just under 500 trips less in the AM peak hour than in 2004, which is about a 20% reduction. In the PM, it was about 250 trips less than in 2004. It's about 10% reduction. So, in general, lower traffic volumes on a daily and PM or a peak hour basis on Fairview. There was a question, another question about what are the true peaks on Fairview? Because obviously there is a lot of activity, a lot of restaurant activity, McDonald's and so forth, and the question came up about the noon hour, whether the noon hour for this particular area was the peak. We looked at that 2010 data, which provided us hourly counts of Fairview in the project area, and found that while it was close, the noon hour was fairly close, it was slightly less than the AM peak hour, which was then slightly less than the PM peak hour. So the AM and PM peak hours still did hold as far as being the worst case scenarios, and so the results of the traffic study were still relevant. Lastly, was this question of right turns on red. And I must tell you that the amount of discussion that's taken place on right turns on red relative to this project has been far more than I think I've ever discussed on any project. There might be some confusion about right turns on red because of how much discussion has taken place about it. It begins to appear like this is some sort of tool that we use in order to dial down or dial up the mitigations at an intersection, which just isn't the case. The actual fact of it is that right turns on red are just really a depiction of what's actually going on at the intersection. What happens is that traffic counters collect data on the total amount of right turns, but then they also record how many people are making that right on the red light. And that's important because the right turns on red don't really take up any additional capacity of the intersection, because what they're doing is they're borrowing time essentially from another direction. The other direction has a green light, and they're going at the same time, so they're not taking up any extra capacity of the intersection. So they're not really impacting the intersection. So all we're doing is collecting data on what's actually taking place on the ground, how the intersection is actually operating. We're not doing anything tweaking with the numbers or anything like that. We're just recording what the actual experience is to the average driver at the intersection. So that's what right turns on red do and what we collect. And in the comparison, because it was so out in front in the original study, Caltrans obviously keyed in on that and noticed the right turns on red, and they had some count from sometime that they thought was different. We compared a count from SBCAG that was collected in 2008, and you can see in Table 4 of my supplemental report that shows that right turns on red in 2004 from the southbound on-ramp were 32%, and in 2008 they were 78%. And then the other direction, 52% in 2004 and 36% in 2008. So, but when you look at the real column to look at is the effective right turns. That's how many people are making right turns during their own green light, the people that are actually affecting the capacity of the intersection. And in both cases, the volumes are significantly lower than in 2004. So the impacts that they have are far less. This also sort of feeds into the fact that there's less traffic on Fairview itself, and it sort of makes sense. If there's less traffic on Fairview itself, it's going to be easier to make a right turn during the red light. There's fewer cars that you're conflicting with when you're making those right turns. So all the data seems to sort of gel in the same direction. And essentially, as I said, all the data points to being lower than today than what it was then. And the results of the study at the time were that there were no impacts. And with volumes being significantly lower today than there were then, those conclusions still remain. The other thing I wanted to repeat is this is not unique to Goleta. This is something that's happening all over the area. It's happening all over the county and all over South Coast. Volumes are down significantly today than they were several years ago. So with that, volumes are down. The project is slightly lower. So the conclusions of the original traffic study still remain valid for today's traffic. And I'm here to answer any other questions. Thanks.
Mr. Chair, thank you for your indulgence on the time. We obviously did not do a rehearsal of this. We did our little independent pieces. So we're a little over double our estimated time, and we apologize. We want to thank you for holding this hearing on what might be considered a special date, giving us the chance to get back and be moving with this project as quickly as we have been. We do hope that this additional information will reassure you that this project meets Goleta's design and development standards. The South Fairview Commercial Center will become a fine new gateway to Old Town Goleta and will boost the city's effort to redevelop. We therefore request that the Commission certify the final MND, approve the development plan, and the minor conditional use permit, and make the findings as outlined by staff. And, of course, if you have further questions, we'd be glad to answer them. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. White. Planning Commissioners, would you have any questions of the applicant at this time? No questions? Okay, then as part of the public hearing, we have some members of the public who would like to speak, so I'm going to open that up. Presumably maybe 3 minutes will be adequate, except in the case of the folks from the DRB, if you're actually representing your board there, you can take as long as you like. And I'd like to start with Mr. Vandeman, and then it would be Mr. Branch, and then Ms. Brown. Or if you guys want to switch on that, either way you want to do that.
Chair Sheeler, members of the Planning Commission, members of staff. My name is Gary Vandeman. I'm here for myself, my own behalf, and I've been following along with DRB a lot over the past 4 or 5 years, and so I've seen this project before when it went to DRB, and I liked what it looked like then, and I still do. So I guess I'm here to, you know, after the last meeting when I spoke up for the project, Mr. Price asked me if I'd come and say something to you, so that's what I'm doing here. At the last meeting, the question was brought up about signage blocking visibility. And I think that's there's a bigger issue here, and that is that the sign space allocation, where the sign's going to be on the building, in the yard, what have you, not the signs themselves, but the allocation of where things are going to be, needs to be on the preliminary approval. Okay. Also, the address number needs to be on the building. Like down on Yardi, the Yardi projects, they've got it, you know, tastefully done up there in the corner. Because people coming over the hill are not necessarily watching their GPS. They're, you know, maybe looking for an address. Oh, there's 151. Okay. This is a gateway project, but it's a gateway to Old Town and to our local airport. I think the design pays homage to our aviation history. The mix of styles does look, you know, give it an Old Town feel because it's not just one monolith. You know, Old Town is, you know, this and that, and, you know, it's a real eclectic assortment. The tower is a literally and figuratively a lightning rod. It seems like people either love the tower or they unlove the tower. There's been a lot of height concerns about that, and I'm going the opposite direction. Today, I think the tower looks too squat. It looks a lot like the Spanish-style towers on houses. You know, they're just too compact. I think adding 3 or 4 feet and something to kind of address the top, a weather vane, a spire, something, not a beacon light, no, but just it needs something up there. But so where I'm coming to is the design specifics, such as the height, the sign of the location of the signs, the weather vane, whatever. Please leave those to the DRB, the architects on the DRB. They're really very good at what they do. And I think that, you know, you'd be happy with what they come up with. Because most of the questions, it's interesting, it's almost like a rerun of DRB, because you, citizens of Goleta, have a lot of the same concerns that other people have and the DRB members. So it's been an interesting exercise here. Traffic circulation is a little concern. Any use of the site is going to have access problems, such as the way it was born. It will be always less traffic than the mobile station that was there 10 years ago. So I guess that's it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Vandeman. Mr. Branch, Cecilia, Ms. Brown.
Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, thank you for letting me go next. I'm here to represent the Design Review Board. I was selected because I was one of the original members of the board that reviewed this project when it first came. It was me and Carl Schneider. And we had the opportunity to see the first project, and of course you're not seeing that, but I, while the Design Review Board did like that project, I'm here to tell you that the Design Review Board liked this project even better, particularly those, both for Carl and I, who happened to remember the first project. Smaller footprint, building is smaller, it's not as high, and there's increased landscaping. I think that if, and I know the chair had the opportunity to hear the hearing, I think you would find that it was unanimous that the Design Review Board liked the project. They were very complimentary of its architecture, its consistency with the Old Town guidelines, felt it was presented itself very well. There were some very interesting elements, fresh ideas that were placed, incorporated into the architecture, and there would be a nice gateway element. Mr. Vandeman has spoken about the height, and several members of the Design Review Board felt that it could be taller. I personally don't feel that way. I think it's fine, the height that it is. But generally, the DRB was okay with the height. And I think that you have a picture. We didn't see the picture that's presented in your staff report of the building without its tower. But that's not what we want in Old Town. We want a building that's fresh and interesting and lively, and this is it. What we have is a building that, for those of you who like the hospital, this is, in some sense, a mirror of that. It has many of those kind of interesting elements, eclectic elements that you find throughout the buildings in Old Town. Overall, the Design Review Board thought it was an excellent project, appreciated the architecture, and is very happy to see the improvement it's going to bring to that particular area and that particular site. We realize it's a very difficult site. We would have liked to have seen some different frontage improvements, but we understand that went out the window probably when Fairview was redesigned many years ago. So we're comfortable with what is being presented. So with that, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions from the commission?
No. Ms. Brown? Okay, great.
Commissioner Sullivan.
Sure.
Ms. Brown, when the project was mentioned earlier that the project would come back to the DRB.
I'm sorry. It was mentioned earlier that the project would come back to the DRB for, I think the words were architectural detail. What would those kinds of things amount to?
Well, several of the ideas that were presented is on the tower. I think the appearance of the tower, the public seems to think that it wants to be taller, and I think if you made the windows longer or larger, that would make it appear taller without actually having to increase its height. That's probably the first issue, and that was my comment. And the second issue, if Kevin, would you put up the northern elevation of the building, and I'll show you. In fact, the architect who made that recommendation is here, and his recommendation was instead of having square, back up one. Instead of having the square corner of that northern elevation, is to have rounded corners as you do in the front of the building. And if I may step away from the microphone, I'll show you.
So they would be more shoulder-like?
Yes. It'd be sort of the what's in the front on that eastern elevation to sort of mirror that. And those, I think, were the only two suggestions. But when we come back, we'll look at it in more detail. And certainly if you have some comments, we'd be happy to consider those and look at them. But overall, I think the architecture looks very nice. It's elegant. It's nice to see that in an Old Town building where you've got a lot of nice detail to look at. The tower is a nice focal point. We've seen a lot of good detail in the hospital building. We didn't get that in the Hampton Inn, unfortunately. But in this building, I think you will. I think there's a lot of nice elements to it, and certainly a lot of very openness about it. And one thing that the applicant didn't talk about is there's going to be that nice plaza in front. So if there's a coffee shop, you can sit out there and look at the great views, watch the traffic. But it is going to be, I feel, a nice building.
Thank you.
That's the Design Review Board's opinion as well. Okay.
Any other questions, commissioners?
Okay.
Thank you for taking the time.
Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Mr. Branch?
Good evening. I'm Scott Branch, and I happen to be on the DRB, but I'm not really representing them right now. I'm representing myself as an architect. Just to clarify what she was talking about, I happen to be the one that made the suggestion they were talking about, and you said rounded shoulders on that form, and I don't think that was correct. The flat part of that element that we were talking about, was the suggestion was to, rather than have it be flat, have it arc slightly to match the sort of Quonset hut appearance of the front, was my suggestion. When you said rounded shoulders, that sort of turns it into a Santa Fe corner thing, which I don't think is where they're heading with that. I could be wrong, but I just thought I'd bring that up. Overall, I saw this project when I first joined DRB, and I thought it was handsome then and fit well into the community, and that hasn't changed. I think it's a great project. I think that this is the exact kind of project that would be attractive to see upon entering Goleta from Fairview. It was a gas station, and in fact, I think the mirror to my old Datsun is in the dirt there somewhere, but what an improvement. I mean, this is a place that people are going to want to hang out, and, you know, as an architect, the aesthetics of that are without question very highbrow and comply with all the requirements of the city, as demonstrated beautifully by DesignArc when they came to the DRB. So I'm in full support of this project, and I think it would be an enhancement to the city.
Thank you. Okay, that ends the number of speakers we have, so we'll close that part of the public forum and bring this back to the Planning Commission. Are there any staff responses to any things that the app presentationers made?
Mr. Chair and Commissioners, I just wanted you to know that with regard to signage, signs require a separate application, and that application is not before you, and that's processed under our sign regulations. So that would be the appropriate time to determine whether or not any future signs were conforming. And with regard to building numbers, we actually don't regulate those. The fire department does. We do see them at some point during the clearance process, but size and location and so forth is regulated by the fire department. And then, not in response to public comment, but at the appropriate time, I wanted to enter one more change into your record with regard to the housing element and policies that apply. If you want, I can do it now in case it's important to your comments.
Please go ahead.
Okay. Throughout your documents, or at least in some places in your documents, is reference to housing element policy 3.2. which is the mitigation of employee housing impacts from non-residential uses. And we got a little carried away with our numbers, or at least didn't transcribe them properly. So we will make the correction. That would be, we would project 30 employees. These housing on-site would be rental, which is a benefit right there. And the two units on site could be available to employees of businesses at the project. They may or may not be. But if they were, then if you use an average household size, the project could provide for 20% of the employees, which would be 6. I think in this instance, the units are kind of small. So I don't know if the average household size would be a good generation factor here. It's 2.7 per unit. So I actually think that the project itself, in the event that employees lived there, would probably provide for approximately 10 to 20%. So, and this would appear on page 76 of your packet, which I believe is a section in the MND, and then also on page 225, which is in your general plan consistency section. There might be reference to it also in your staff report that has to be cleaned up. I think that would probably put it at about page 3 or 4. No, I think we didn't bring up housing element in the staff report itself, so.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. Okay, I guess we're back to the Planning Commission. Would anybody like to have any questions of the staff or of the applicants while we have the opportunity? Who'd like to go first? Questions? I did have one question. Perhaps any one of you might be able to answer it, please. And it's just probably a very quick question. And that is, will this building, I understand it's a shell building, will it be a triple net lease?
Yes.
Okay. I just bring that up because I know there are some issues and difficulties associated with triple net lease buildings and being able to work with photovoltaics and how to determine who pays for that and those kinds of tenant improvements and who receives the benefits from those kind of tenant improvements. There aren't like a lot of incentives associated with triple net leases and renewable energy buildings.
And that's a good point. Many of the green factors of this building will come into play with the tenant improvements. We'll be in waiting because conceivably there could be a single tenant on a whole floor.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're right, for example, the PVs would best be divvied up or be installed by the person who gets to benefit from them. Right.
Okay, well, thank you for that. So I guess that exhausts our questions of the applicant and the staff. The public hearing is closed, and we now move into Planning Commission deliberations. So would anybody like to lead us off? Commissioner Stapleman.
Thank you, Chair. I would really like to thank the applicant for returning with all of the additional information to the questions that were raised at our previous meeting. And I would also like to thank and let the DRB know how much I appreciate their work. And I know sometimes these things go on, and they're massaged just to the point of, you know, dough. But I would like to thank you for that and also for the staff for coming back with another presentation. I do want to say that I really like that tower. And I like the tower because I like the windows at the top of the tower. It is a very green element because it allows light to go into that shaft. During the day, you don't have to really worry about lights on. I think it's a safety issue. You go into a dark stairwell, lights are out. Even if it's an overcast day, you're going to have plenty of light going down into that shaft to make that stairway a safe one, safer than one that doesn't have, you know, glass like that at the top. It's very important for me to state that the disabled are citizens just like everyone else, and I don't think that it is appropriate to design any structure that has two stories without an elevator for the handicap to utilize to get to that second floor. And so I'd like to thank you for really pushing and continuing to get, you know, an elevator in there for the handicap to use to be able to access the building properly. I really like the architecture. I like the different styles that are brought into it. I think it is appropriate for a gateway building. I think it's going to be fabulous once it's built, and I look forward to seeing that happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Who'd like to go next? Mr. Walls.
Thanks. I, too, really appreciate the answers that we received tonight. And the process that we went through of, I think the commission, my colleagues, asked some really good questions, and I think that the applicant t- took all of our questions quite seriously. And, you know, we try to deal as quickly as we can with projects or items that come before us, but sometimes, for a number of reasons, in this case, more information helping us make our decision, it's just necessary not to rush the first meeting. I think it reflects on the vote that may come after deliberation based on more information as we have requested. So I'm trying to thank the applicant. I know any kind of delay is not good news, but thank you very much for coming back with the answers to our questions. Staff, I want to talk about some things now that that kind of have been on my mind. The first is the good cause finding. I take this seriously, and I believe that every commissioner does. So I think the message that we're really sending is it's not an easy thing to make a good cause finding. So we need adequate information. It's not good enough just to begin to cite some documents and say, and so it becomes eligible for a good cause finding. The report now showing elements of the requirement of an elevator, those kinds of things, the calling out of the affordable housing element as it relates to helping the commission make its finding, those things are very, very good. I think we also are pretty much in agreement that we want our information to be fresh. In this case, we had 2005 traffic data. It was very comforting to learn that more recent data not just confirms that data, but shows a bettering of the situation. I also note that a couple of things in this project kind of recur when we talk about projects. So I hope staff wouldn't mind if I call two or three of them out so that when we get a report where it is appropriate, perhaps they would be addressed. I think that we have asked several times on different projects for sort of an identification of the greenness of the building. And I may be wrong, but I think I'm detecting an impatience in simply having buildings come in to be ready for the future. I think we would all like to see, and this, as has been explained to us, this project incorporates many things. I think we would like an identification of, sorry to overuse the phrase, the greenness of a project. And then, you know, I've always been interested in the traffic. AM and PM tell a lot, but they're, you know, hourly specific. ADTs also tell a lot, but they're kind of broad. When you have a situation where there may be some impacting factors, in this case, I had wondered about the clustering of those fast food restaurants at noontime, and I'm told it was fairly close. When there is something special, maybe it isn't quite enough to present AM and PM. And PM. And then the traffic movement, I don't mind saying I am still nervous about the left turn out of there. I drive Fairview every day. I live fairly close, and it's pretty rough. But I also don't want to penalize this project. So, but in other words, if there is anything you can tell us about something specific that we have information on with a project, I think that would be helpful. And I actually think I'm not asking or trying to burden staff. I think you already know. So feed it over a little bit where you can. So those are my overall comments. And once again, my mind is in a better place regarding this project because of the time that was taken in this second meeting. And I want to thank you.
As well as staff.
Thank you, Vice Chair Wallace. Commissioner Solomon?
I can only add my agreement to the articulate comments made by my fellow commissioners. Thank you.
Okay.
Well, I'll go ahead and close this out then. I do think that the appreciate, and you said the 2 months went by rather quickly. Hopefully this wasn't too much of an undue burden upon your group. I think we do have a better project overall as a result of this, and I think this is a, turned out to be a good way to do this. I did review the DRB tape, and I appreciated Mr. Bartlett's comment saying that this building will be here 40 years, if not longer, from now. So that's kind of an important legacy to pass along, and that you mentioned that there is an ability to adapt as some of these technologies become more feasible, that you haven't foreclosed on future opportunities. It just doesn't make sense to foreclose on future opportunities. A few comments to staff. This is regards to, and this isn't necessarily your project, but this came somewhat of a litmus test of sorts. I'm concerned that there may be an inherent inconsistency with the building height standards established in our general plan. Will all two-story retail and office space buildings, shell buildings with parapet screening that meets city requirements, be incapable of meeting current general plan building height standards? This project did what it needed to do. It looked like they tried everything they could to reduce the height of this building, and it still simply doesn't meet what's listed in our general plan, which then brings us into having to go down the good cost-finding trail, which complicates things significantly. Also on, I believe it was page 76, we're talking about the housing element portion, and a quote was, actual construction of on-site units is weighed more favorably than payment of monetary contribution towards housing assistance, because units are likely to be available more quickly than units eventually constructed as monetary contributions are collected over time. Now, having done this for a couple of years, I've heard maybe the other side of that, and I'm maybe a little confused, or maybe it depends is the answer. On other projects the Planning Commission has reviewed, we have been informed by staff that in-lieu fees are weighed more favorably as they can be leveraged with local nonprofits to build a larger number of affordable units. So I'm not sure if there is one answer to that question, but just wanted to put that one out there in terms of how we're looking at these and what kinds of findings that we're being asked to make. This wasn't brought up this evening and didn't get a chance to really mention it at the first meeting, but I do really want to acknowledge the outstanding work that was done by all parties to mitigate the impacts of development on the Native American cultural resources at this location. And then I'll just close by saying, due to the unique location of this site, marginally exceeding the building height provided in the general plan is acceptable, as I can make the good cause finding that this project will not create an adverse impact to community character, aesthetics, or public views. Would anybody else like to add anything else? Okay, then I think we're, Commissioner Walls.
You know, I do have one question that it doesn't bear hugely on this project. And now I can't remember what it was, so I guess it didn't bear at all.
I'm sure it's important.
It's, yes, Bill, it's come back. Okay. Yep. Now to begin a sentence, it is my recollection that, okay, that the city of Goleta, no city, can require that housing of a project be exclusive to employees who work there. Is this correct?
There's no legal mechanism by which you could require that. So it's simply that the tools available to you to do that are not there. So although it can be encouraged and there are many employment programs that are provided, for instance, we have looked at employers that were able to provide a program to their employees, what you have to look at is what arrangement you have. The permit that you are issuing is to this applicant. So if this applicant has control over employees that will be working within the building, they may have that ability and those tools available to them to ensure that their employees have housing. However, what often occurs is tenants go in there, and those are employees that the applicant before you would not have control over how the employees are treated and what programs are available to them.
All right. You know, if others on the commission would like more information, one of the things that nothing prohibits us from doing so, but there are no tools to make it a reality. So, but I still wonder about downtown Santa Barbara and how they have handled some of their projects where there seemed to be a setting aside of the downtown, some of the downtown rentals for... Mm-hmm. I don't know. If you have any time to check up on that.
I do have some information, and I don't have specific parties, so I'll provide you an instance, a factual instance, without the actual what the players are, and I could look into that further. But in one instance, it is a business that had property in different locations in Santa Barbara. And so what they were able to do is their employees working in at one commercial property or services property was able to provide or was able to construct residential buildings at another property that they owned, and then was able to give first dibs essentially to their employees to those residential units. However, they had many tools available to them, including assets such as land and the ability to construct those units. So again, you have to look at a project-by-project basis as to what the setup is, what's available, what the policies are, and what tools that the applicant has available to them.
Okay, part two. So, well, to summarize what I have understood, the cities have perhaps the tool of encouragement, but not the mandatory array of the tool chest. Is that correct?
We have different mandatory tools available, but one is not one that's not available. There's not a legal mechanism to require an applicant to provide housing for employees. Especially when those employees are not that applicant's employees.
Okay, now the second part of the question is, it isn't particularly applicable here, and I apologize for getting a little off, but can an employer reserve housing for its employees?
As an obligation from the city, or?
No.
Employer has available to them whatever they are willing to provide. So there's many employers that provide housing programs to their employees, and
housing programs. Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm trying to get at the discrimination issue.
Like units.
Yeah, setting aside numbers of units.
You know, without a specific instance, I don't see that there would be necessarily any discrimination issues. There are employers that provide housing for their employees. Of course, they always have to comply with all the federal and state laws.
Okay.
With regard to that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I think, Bill, this is my last question, and I think it's more for planning staff. Mm-hmm. Thank you. You know, on page 76, we say that these units, here we're talking about the two units, could provide accommodation for 20% of the estimated employment number. I think on its face, that's simply a true statement. No issue about it. But I don't know, in light of the questions about actual provision, I don't know how much weight that kind of thing should be given. I mean, I'm thinking that why not stick to the reality, which is that the general plan calls out rental housing as affordable housing. So maybe the more meaningful statistic is to say that it provides to on-site going to be built affordable. Maybe two doesn't sound like a lot, but for a project like this, it is a lot. Do you see it?
Absolutely. Chair and commissioners, kind of when I was clarifying how we were going to fix the numbers earlier, that struck me as well. I don't know that it's a necessary part of being able to find consistency with that policy. So we can remove it if the commission would like, and I had already amended it to approximately 10 to 20%. And I do agree that it may not necessarily end up that way. It may not be employees at the project site that live there.
Well, it only says could.
Could, right. So we could remove that if that's the direction of the commission.
I don't really care if it's removed. I think in trying to make good cause finding, I am not at all certain that that's a relevant a relevant informational bite.
If I can make a clarification on the findings as well, just to assist the Planning Commission. Although what's prepared before you was prepared by staff, and this is information provided to you by staff, ultimately, when you are making these findings, you are making these findings as the Planning Commission. These are your findings. Staff is assisting you with providing you all the information, all the supporting data, and everything that they believe in preparation of the staff report will assist you in making these findings that you're required to make pursuant to the code. However, ultimately, they're yours, and you must own them as your decision. Therefore, if there are any changes that you ever find that are necessary, or if there's something that is not quite in line with how you're looking at making the consistency finding, you are free to make a change to it. That would be part of your motion.
Mr. Chair, personally, I am not interested in a change. What saves the whole sentence is could. Pigs could fly if they had wings, you know. I'm sorry. But if staff feels that perhaps, if staff wants to do something about it, that's fine with me also.
Do any of the other commissioners have any feelings on this potential change or just to...
I mean, since it does say could, I don't see that it's binding one way or another, so I think it's fine.
Well, we've finished our deliberations, and I believe we're to the point where we would want to make a motion. I did notice some huddling occurring and that there may be some cleanup items associated with these motions.
Mr. Chair and commissioners, if you want me to repeat them, I can, but you could, I did itemize them already. In each of the motions, you could say as amended at the hearing of 6/13/11. If there's any question, I can re-itemize.
I can assist with the motions because you are going to have to take each of the motions separately, and each motion entails different changes to it. Real quick before we do that, I do just want to clarify for the record the explanation for that could, although we cannot provide that linkage to these employees, the theory and the effort of the cities is to make available as many units as possible as employment positions are created within the city. So the goal is to not have employment coming into the city without residential units also being considered and accommodations being made in some form or fashion, whether it's by fees or if it's by the units themselves, to assist with the impact of new development coming into the city. So again, in consideration of the findings that you're making, that's information available to you. And if you're ready to make any of the motions, we can take them separately, and I can assist with the changes.
Thank you. I'm sure we're going to want to do these separately, and we will need some assistance with the changes. So if someone would like to at least start us with a motion, and then we can craft it as necessary.
I'd like to call for the motion, the first one. to adopt Planning Commission Resolution 11- next in line, entitled A Resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Goleta, California, adopting the final mitigated negative declaration for the South Fairview Commercial Center Project, 151 South Fairview Avenue, APN number 073-080-019, case number 01-SB-DP-CUP.
And that will be as amended to include, first, fixes to the formatting of the recitals of the resolution, and that's on page 13 of your packet. Changes to the public services section of the addendum as provided by staff today with regard to fire protection services, and that's on page 84 of the packet. And changes to the land use section of the addendum as provided by staff with regard to housing element policy HE 3.2, and that is page 76 of the packet. And if there's anything else, I think that covers it all.
There's been a motion made by Commissioner Stapleman. Is there a second to the motion?
I'll give a second.
Second by Vice Chair Wallace. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That's 4-0. So that gives us the mitigated negative declaration. And now, would anybody like to make the second group of findings?
Sure.
Go ahead.
I'd like to adopt Planning Commission Resolution 11-Next-in-Line, entitled A Resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Goleta, California, approving a development plan and minor conditional use permit for the South Fairview Commercial Center Project, 151 South Fairview Avenue, APN number 073-080-019, case number 01-SB-DP-CUP.
And that's as amended to include changes to general plan consistency findings in Exhibit 2 of the resolution, as provided by staff with regard to housing element policies HE 3.1 and 3.2, and that's on page 225 of your packet.
Thank you for that. There has been a motion made by Commissioner Stapleman. Is there a second to this motion?
Second.
Second by Vice Chair Walls. Any further discussion? We will call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? None. Passes 4-0. Thank you. Thank you, staff. Okay, we still have a little bit more Planning Commission business to do this evening. Turn this over to the director's report. Mr. Chase, would you like to lead us in this?
Thank you very much, and good evening, members of the commission.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and commission.
Thank you.
I'll be brief. On tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock in the council chambers here, the Design Review Board will be meeting on a number of projects for preliminary approval and some for final approval. I think of note what I wanted to bring to your commission is a project you saw some time ago. It was a Camino Real Hotel project. It'll be up for its preliminary Design Review Board review tomorrow at 3 p.m. Haskell's Landing is a part of this, a little bit on Decker's Outdoor. A few other projects will be in front of the Design Review Board tomorrow. On a Thursday, there will be a special public hearing of the City Council in the Council Chambers here at 1:30 in the afternoon. It is to take up some of the components on the Decker's Outdoor Corporate Headquarters project. Location is at the Cabrillo Business Park, Los Caneros on Hollister Avenue. It is a four-building plan, close to 150,000 square feet overall, actually 192,000 square feet overall, and it is a corporate headquarters proposal. What the City Council will be taking up is an amendment to the development agreement and a certification of the CEQA document. In this case, it's an addendum to the final environmental impact report for the Cabrillo Business Park. So that'll be at 1:30 on Thursday. I wanted to also draw your attention to the June 21st meeting of the City Council. At that point in time, City Council will take up the two-year budget, be a public hearing, and is likely to be adopted. There are, as part of that budget, 18 Planning Commission meetings per year for the next 2 years built into the budget, along with 20 Design Review Board meetings per year over the next two-year period. There'll be a number of contracts that'll come before the City Council on that particular afternoon and of June 21st, and among them are contracts for document imaging and for an electronic web-based permit tracking system. Ultimately, what we are doing is building the infrastructure for your planning department, community services department, geographic information system, such that you can access this information on permits, be they permits issued at some point in the past, all the way to project proposals and where a particular project is on its pathway. You can access it 24/7 from any web-based device. So we're on the way to building what I hope to be and infrastructure that will be widely utilized by all parties that have an interest in our line of business. And Patty, do you have anything to add this evening?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioners. I just wanted to point out that your meeting on June 27th, later this month, we do not have items for you, so that meeting is canceled.
Okay, I'm back to the Planning Commission. Would anybody like to share any comments this evening? Anybody? Going once? Going twice? Okay. I'd like to ask for a motion for adjournment. So I'd like to make that motion. There's the motion, a second. I can count on that. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Good evening.